Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's
world service.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
It's a very exciting day here at Second Captains as we await the arrival of a select group of World Service members for our first live event in our new studios, which takes place later this evening as Roddy Collins and Paul Howard land in to talk about their new book, The Rodfather. Welcome to the show. Hey, Ken.
Hey, Owen, how are you?
The way the office is set up here, just to paint a picture for people, there's a ground floor where we do our bits and bobs downstairs. Then we walk upstairs to record from this studio.
Mezzanine level.
Yeah, a mezzanine level, exactly. And outside this studio, along the same mezzanine level, there is an open area, which is where we'll be sitting later on. The seats are set up out there already. Mm-hmm. We'll be sitting there with the Rodfather himself.
Right, the big 99 with loads of raspberry sauce on it.
Preaching. What I'm saying is it's a very Rodfather vibe out there because our audience will be sitting downstairs on some chairs, which we've got ready for them there. The Rodfather will be above them, sort of preaching down. Yeah,
yeah. Lording it up down at Cowtown Beach.
Lording it up.
He would be lording.
That's literally exactly what he's going to be doing there. Which reminds me of one of the many. I see the book is in front of you there, Ken. There's a lot of funny
stuff. I've been reading the book, Alan. This is a pretty funny book.
There's one bit in it which he talks about the christening of his son. When it came to naming him, there wasn't even a debate. He was going to be Roderick. If I had to go through life with that awful name, then my firstborn son should have to do it too. It would be character building. I had this mad idea for the christening that I was going to introduce Roderick to everyone by carrying him into the room like the last emperor of China on a sort of ceremonial chair that I was going to make myself. But wiser heads prevailed. It kind of reminds me of the vibe out here today. I think there's a bit of a last emperor of China set up for
I bought 22 choc ices.
It is, yeah. It's a lot of funny stories. None of them, it's kind of like quick bang funny story onto the next. There's some poignant stuff in there as well. I don't want to say it's just all gags in The Rodfather, but there are plenty of funny stuff in there as well.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just looking at her. You know, his wife, Caroline, they weren't married at the time, though, has got pregnant. Mm-hmm. You'd better look after her, her ma said, pointing a warning finger at me. Mrs. Hanny, I said, I promise, I always will. Later on, during the Celtic Tiger years, we'd be drinking Veuve Clicquot. Have I pronounced Veuve Clicquot out of a set of Waterford crystal glasses that I bought in the market and which turned out to be dessert bowls. And I'd say, there you are, Caroline, didn't I tell you, man? So, yeah, nice helpings of champagne.
Tonight's chat with Roddy and Paul Howard. We're going tomorrow for World Service members. We'll also be covering the midweek Premier League football. SecondCaptains.com. £5 a month plus VAT if you're not already a member. It's going to be a lot of fun tonight, and that will be played for World Service members. Going to be talking to Shane Horgan on this podcast ahead of Leinster and Munster meeting for the first time this season next Saturday. Simon, how are you?
Hey, lads. How are you?
Well, I'm disappointed in you, Simon. What's all this you've been telling me about Munster struggling under their new coaching team to string two passes together for the last few weeks? I was looking at them at the weekend. They look pretty good in beating the Bulls with a bonus point ahead of the game against Leinster.
Yeah, and this wasn't coming. You know, there was no sign of any form or confidence. And the Bulls are a pretty good side, made the final of the competition last year. Carberry was man of the match, kicked all his goals, but just started to express himself a little bit. And it was kind of a reminder that Mike Prendergast has come in as their attack coach, and he ultimately has been coaching Racing 92 for the last few years, has the likes of Finn Russell and Teddy Thoma and these guys in the team. So he's used to a team that tries things, expresses themselves, aim to be creative and make a load of mistakes in the process. And I just wonder for Carberry if that message is starting to go through. He's always like, he looks like he's been playing within himself since he came back from the injury, but like it's okay to try things and them not come off, and that might really suit his mindset. Now look, he still made loads of errors and so did Casey, but it was just an absolute sea change from the week before when admittedly he was playing full back, but he's played out half as well this year and looked just bereft of confidence. And it was a whole new Carberry, it was a whole new Munster, scored tries. And the other major positive for them was their fringe players. Idogbo, Tom Ahern came on, Shane Daly at fullback, Jack Crowley, a lot of those on the Emerging Ireland tour. Crowley in particular, he was the star of this Ireland emerging team that went to South Africa for a few weeks. Potentially a star in the making. Ron O'Gara rates him really highly. That should ring alarm bells for any coach here who might have him under them, that this guy has potential if O'Gara thinks he's good. The fact that Farrell and Cat brought him on the tour means they rate him. And he just has this spark about him. He looks kind of cocky and confident, has an unbelievable sidestep, has a running game, but more than anything, just seems to have a natural confidence. So not just did we have Carberry playing better, the guy who I think should probably be next to him and pushing Carberry for that 10th spot looked really good too. And then a bunch of these young players looking like they could change the season still.
Things looking up for Munster without getting too carried away. They're also looking up for this competition in recent times. I know you kind of... You know, we're in the situation where the champions, you know, where the European rugby, I don't know if it feels as though maybe the URC are in a position where they can close the gap in terms of perception. Because it is strange. In most sports, you've got a domestic competition and a European competition, certainly when you think of football. And it depends on each team what the priority might be. But, you know, often it's quite even. Whereas there's always been the situation within Irish rugby, the way it's been structured, that it's just all about Europe. You know, if you can do something in the Pro 14, that's great. But particularly where Munster at the moment, obviously a Pro 14 title would be amazing for them regardless. But just in general, the competition seems to have picked up a fair bit of steam, I think, since the South Africans came in to shake things up a little bit.
It really has. Like, it, you know, the usual pretenders are playing well, but the main takeaway five games in is just how much better it is exactly than a few years ago. And it is almost all down to the South Africans coming into it. But when you compare it to the English Premiership with its current woes, Wasps and Worcester going into administration, with the European Cup, as you say, it doesn't start until December. So it's kind of out of sight, out of mind anyway. And even then has this strange new format. And even then, you look at Leinster last year, they played a couple of pudding teams. So they basically didn't start Europe until the following year. And then it often features English and French sides who don't care about it, aren't very good, play their B or C team.
That's the middle of a World Cup as well, by the way. Well, it's towards the end of the World Cup, but it's 9th, 10th of December. Yeah, I mean, the World Cup will be going strong at that stage.
Yeah, knockout.
Knockout stage is a World Cup. Rugby has its own base of fans who will be big into that anyway, but that's going to struggle to get
100%
general sort of sports fans' interest.
Yeah. So in relative terms, the league, which obviously is now called the URC, is the best it's ever looked. It's got better players, obviously better teams, more tries, more attack-minded teams, like the Sharks and the Stormers in particular who've come into it, and Ulster. Ulster have scored 190 points in five games, so they're averaging five tries a game, 38 points a game. And it's not as if they're kind of mid-table and exciting. They're being rewarded for that approach. They're second in the table, could have beaten Leinster a few weeks ago, could or should have beaten them, and got their first win away to a South African team this weekend. So it's not just that the South African team's coming in. There's a couple, Edinburgh and Ulster are also starting to play that way. The biggest thing, though, I think, is just there's more jeopardy in each game. Like, the South African teams, even when they're not playing well, you see the Bulls of the weekend, they didn't play particularly well, but they have a spikiness to them, a bit like their national team. And when they're not playing well, they still have that kind of spite about them. It's creating rivalries. And, you know, Leinster and Munster now fear them, obviously, as well. Like, we've been playing the Welsh teams for 20 years now, and no one loves or hates them or cares for them in any deep way. Even the Welsh fans don't feel that way. And then within like a few months of us playing the South African teams, like, we really want to beat them besides the fact that they're in our league.
And so you have a relatively humdrum fixture like Munster had the other day.
Yep.
But because it's against a really good team, a South African team,
yep,
who we know almost won the whole thing last year.
Yeah.
A win against them suddenly has everyone feeling good and feeling something, which you don't feel against the...
Feeling something is exactly the feeling you got from it. And when somebody, say, like Carberry, performs well in that atmosphere against a better defence, then, he knows he's done something. Well, there's no point doing it against Zebre or the Dragons. You know, they lost the Dragons, but you know what I mean? he comes away from that not just saying, oh, I did something against the Bulls.
Let's hear from Shane.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
It's a beautiful summer's day. The breeze is stupendous.
Stupendous. Stupendous.
Would this podcast be even more stupendous without ads?
Without ads?
Ads. If so, then join us for daily commercial-free shows at secondcaptains.com for just €5 a month.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm not bumping them up. I'm not Irish. I'm just saying my observations, they are amazing.
Stupendous.
Munster are back in form and just in the nick of time before they play Leinster next Saturday. Shane Horgan, how's the form?
Yeah, good, back. Everything's sorted.
good. Yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, it's one promising performance anyway, and things look like they might be starting to click. How much are you reading into this, and how much were you reading into the performances up until now, which have been fairly abysmal?
I'm more hopeful, I suppose. Mm. That's why it's the rugby has boiled down in recent years to a massive amount of analysis, and to use a sort of the term, the data set isn't quite big enough just yet, and we need to see some more performances from Munster. We need to see whether sort of the shape that I think I can see them trying to get in continues, and that was probably the area of most improvement. I could see they got into their shape. You can sort of see what they're trying to do. They animated quite well. They had issues with depth and skills under pressure. And generally, their sort of skill set overall has been what's let them down more than anything. So we need to see an improvement in that skill set. Now, I have kind of a theory behind why we saw maybe more balls going on the deck and players, just not at the level of skill that you would expect. I think it's maybe because the focus has been primarily on the bigger picture. And then, when you're focusing bigger picture, you're not as in tune to, the sort of micro skills that allow you to do the most basic elements in the game. And they seem to have been a little bit more together in what their shape was. And as a result, their skills were a little bit better. It wasn't a brilliant performance, I didn't think. I thought it was much better in the context of some really poor games up to this point. But there's a big job to do at Munster in terms of establishing a new style that suits their players, that then can be implemented against the best teams. And that, I think they're still fairly early in that journey.
Can you just explain that a little more, that theory that they've been too focused on this bigger picture and that's why they've been making smaller mistakes?
Well, not necessarily they'd be too focused, but I think they need to be massively focused on it. It's important. And I thought, if you look at how Leinster have developed, and by the way, that comparison is probably annoying for a Munster contingent, but it is important because they're the key team in this competition, although having not won it last year. But you can see that they're very comfortable with their shape. Even if you look at someone like Ireland, very comfortable with their shape. Munster, I haven't been able to see exactly what they're doing. I thought they were, and when I have seen what they're doing, I think it's a little bit behind the curve. I think there's definitely a movement to try and move Munster, further along the path of a Leinster, an Ireland, even a sort of an Ulster in terms of their shape. But I thought, you know, when the big issues that happens was that the depth wasn't quite right, people overrunning, and again a little bit of inside shoulder passing. So, you know, I could see that, and that's a movement forward. That was necessary, and I need to have a focus on, you know, what is this Munster's way of playing. But when a lot of energy goes into that, sometimes you can take your, not quite literally, but you can take your eye off the ball, and that's where you see silly mistakes being made, or passes go, or passes where they shouldn't be, or early passes, or drop passes. And you know, the general skill set from Munster in the opening weeks of this tournament has been really bad, but they don't all have bad skill set. That makes sense. So I'm trying to figure out what the reason behind it, and that's, you know, just one theory.
And Shane, I guess the out half would be filtering more new information than any other position. And it was really noticeable. I can't quite figure out. Kirby looked bereft of confidence last week. And I know he's playing a full back, but he hadn't looked good in the other games either. And then this week, he just looked in flow, much more comfortable, challenging his own skill set far more. Is this a Kirby thing, or is this that the whole Munster setup changed a little bit and it suited him, and it started to, the game plan started to settle in and bed in a little bit, so he looked better?
I think probably more the latter. Was his performance at 10 a sort of reaction to playing 15 last week, which, you know, don't know the exact circumstances behind it or the conversations that were had behind closed doors, but for Joe Kirby, it's not really comfortable. Then you've got a situation this week where the structure was much better. And when you have a better structure as a 10, you've got more time, you've got more options. And we saw him running that sort of that lazy line, as it were, behind that first pod or behind the second pod and taking the ball again. And I still think I'd like to see a little bit more urgency or a little bit more tempo in the way he plays. And also the sort of decision making when he gets that ball back. My concern is that he doesn't always take the best option. He's, you know, very often he passes to a man that's under a slight bit more pressure than you would want, and I think that's because he doesn't have all his options, you know, open to him in his mind at the moment. So while, you know, the team playing the way they are is really useful for him and will allow him to develop, these two things maybe coexist, you know. So if we can see a better shape, we can see, you know, less ball on the deck, we can see more tempo, and we can see him getting that second touch or even third touch as a 10, then his decision-making in those more difficult, challenging areas will be better. But, you know, this is a very, very important year for Joey Kirby, and it hasn't started, you know, particularly well. He's had this, you know, sort of, we all acknowledge that an incredibly talented guy. Expectations were that he would be further on in his career at this point. I think that's fair to say. He hasn't been lucky with injury. I don't think the last coaching ticket helped him either. So he's had some challenges, but it's delivery time now. And, you know, he'll be certainly happy that with a forward pack and indeed the whole team in Munster that looked much more comfortable than they have in the last couple of weeks. But there's a sustained period of improvement necessary for both Munster and for Joey Kirby if he's going to be sort of, you know, anywhere near the delivery of the type of player that we all wanted him to be and expected him to be a couple of years ago. And actually, it's more than a couple of years ago. It's quite a period of time ago.
Jack Crowley is a really interesting one, isn't he? Because he was incredible on the Emerging Ireland Tour, albeit against awful opposition at times. Is clearly fancied by Farrell and Mike Cash. Ron O'Gara wanted to sign him to La Rochelle not so long ago. Munster, well, certainly on Van Horan, just didn't really give him too many opportunities. Every time I see him, I'm excited. I want to see more of him. Is he potentially the answer at 10? I know, again, we're going on a small data set here, but just from what we've seen of him so far, would you be excited at the very least?
No, yeah, I think he's good. He's bright. He's sharp. His skill set is pretty good. He does bring excitement to the game, which you know, it's bizarre to say this, but I think sort of Joey lost a little bit over the last couple of years, and you kind of get the feeling that he backs himself. You know, he doesn't have a load of baggage. He's still at the point of his career where, I reckon he very much thinks he should be the number 10 for Munster and probably more. So there's a trick here of trying to develop this player at the same time of as giving Joey Carberry sort of every opportunity to blossom into the player that he can, you know, he can and should be. And I think that is quite difficult to do. Especially, you know, it's easier to do if you're in a team that's absolutely flying at the top of the league. You know, that's one thing. But, you know, if you're struggling a bit, it becomes more difficult because you're putting, you know, tens into a position where, you know, they don't feel massively, you know, comfortable. They don't feel as if it's their team. I've always found that, you know, the best tens will sort of take hold of it. It'll be their team. They don't want any, they're not happy with sharing it with anyone else. And I'm not sure sharing that 10 position is massively sort of beneficial for the development of, you know, of either player, especially where there's not one that's, you know, really established and confident in their own ability. And I don't think certainly Joey's there at the moment.
I have to say, looking at Munster at the weekend, that if they're to have a season that now exceeds our expectations, I think it's going to centre around the likes of Crowley. Tom Hearn, amazing when he came on, really good on the Emerging Ireland Tour again. Dogbo, Coombs, obviously, the sort of younger players that are coming up, they're the ones. It's not just that they're new and we don't know much about them. It's also that they're all quite dynamic and seem to back themselves and make big plays. Like Munster just haven't had players that make big plays in recent seasons, or certainly not enough of them.
Yeah, and Dogbo in particular, I thought, he's got something about him. Over the ball, very strong, you know, for a big man. He's got a very wide base at ruck time as well. So, yeah. You know, able to strip the ball, very comfortable in getting down to that, you know, and I think has decent sort of instincts about when to get onto that ball or not. Tom O'Hearn, you know, looks to now be part of a very, very strong second row for Munster. And this is how Munster sort of get back to the top again. But I don't think it's get back in, as you said there, Simon, these are very dynamic players. So I don't think it's get back, you know, to a basic, you know, what was perceived as a basic way of playing for Munster, which was very much a physical, you know, one-out carries or rolling balls. Yes, you know, strong line-out. Yes, they want a, you know, a very dynamic rolling ball. But I think you're seeing players that are, you know, young enough to be influenced by the type of rugby we've seen in the last few years, which means very upskilled, you know, very shape orientated, very demanding of your forwards. So, you know, it's not good enough to be, you know, a big, bulky, you know, second row who wins his line out and does carrying. There's so much more. And in fairness, you know, with the likes of sort of Ty Byrne, that's the shining light for all those players as well, isn't it? You know, he's going, this is the type of, you know, you can see the type of player you need to be a impactful modern forward. And, you know, Munster have him right there showing them what the rest you need to be.
Well, that's it. Like Tadhg Byrne and Peter Manning, to an extent, were an example over the last few weeks of the season that it's not just about, oh, the new coach are putting it down as an excuse that there's a new setup here. They were still performing, and the likes of Scannell and Archer and others weren't, and Kilcoyne. And I'm just thinking, there's the template there of the more established players that, yeah, we're a new setup here, but you can still perform. You still don't drop the ball because you've got three new coaches in.
Yeah, there's kind of there's a basic standard that they have been off for the last while. And, yeah, I'm sure that was concerning, but I do sometimes, and maybe it's this point of this, you know, new voices and change of coaching and change of ideas and different focus. And I'm not saying this is a, you know, like-with-like situation, because it's not, but I always do think back to Joe Schmidt coming into Leinster for the first three games and losing them all, do you know? And listen, it wasn't exactly that was cries for his head, but there was definitely, you know, it was definitely disconcerting. And I'm also not saying that this performance against the Bulls at the weekend, you know, makes everything right for Munster, but you would like to think that it's some level of progress. Now, ideally, you wouldn't be playing Leinster in Leinster the next week, because you'd probably like slightly, you know, a situation where you could maybe build on that that shape under slightly less pressure. Because although, you know, Leinster look very confident at the moment, without, you know, without looking like absolute world beaters or looking at the, you know, the very top of their game, what Munster will be subjected to next weekend is enormous line pressure. and you know, big physicality in the tackle and around the breakdown, with players who know what they're doing. So, you know, developing that type of shape, which I've been speaking about a lot, the hierarchy of it is shape, animation, getting your depth right, and then your skills under pressure. And you know, there's a big difference between delivering, you know, the pressure that you may be under with some of the sort of, you know, the lesser teams in this league or in international rugby, and then seeing how difficult it is not just to sort of execute those skills, but even to get into the, to have the mindset to even try it. And that's what I think they're going to come up against this weekend against Leinster.
You could spin that. I know you said maybe it's not the ideal fixture for them, but you could say that Leinster, they weren't great against Connacht, conditions notwithstanding. They could have been beaten by Ulster. They're not quite at their best. So maybe this is, and now that Munster have this confidence boosting win under their belt, this mightn't actually be a bad fixture at all.
Yeah, I'm not certain. I know Leinster aren't playing, you know, at their top, but, and this is one of the challenges for Leinster. It almost feels like they're sort of holding, they have the handbrake half up. Now, I don't think they're doing that purposefully, but...
Surely not after last season, though, Shane.
No, but this is the problem, Simon, that I actually think that we haven't seen a movement on from last... Remember the conversation that we had a lot last season with Leinster, yeah, going, it's not enough to win the way you're winning in these games. Actually, you have to challenge yourself and play for two or three games at the end of the season. Now, I know that's difficult to do, you know, early in the season. It's also difficult because the conditions are different, and it's a faster track later on in the year, although it's, you know, it hasn't been bad at the very start of the year. But I think they have got into that little bit of a rut where they can dominate the opposition or get through games without challenging themselves to the very, very maximum. And that's tricky. You know, that's tricky for them because...
God, surely the South Africans have changed their mind on that.
Well, you know, let's see how they... You know, I don't know if they have. We've probably been having the conversation for... Actually, it's not even a year. It's maybe a couple of years. And the fact that the South Africans joined last year and immediately won the competition means that they probably don't have the soft touch of, no matter, being able to do that the whole way through this competition, but knowing that they definitely couldn't do it in the Champions Cup. But now, together with that, you've got this championship and they came unstuck on it last year as well. So it's really how deep you're willing to go and how much risk you're able to accept this early in the season by, you know, looking at a bigger goal later on in the season, and Leinster don't seem to have grasped that just yet.
Do you think there might be a reordering, not a reordering of priorities? I know the European Cup is the biggest competition, Shane, but just with the South African teams coming in, winning it last year, sort of setting the cat amongst the pigeons quite a bit, has that lifted what it should mean to actually win this competition? Because it seems like, you know, it's quite a lot of excitement even early on in the season about this. It's a better competition than it was, I think, with the South African teams in there. Is it in some ways, and you know, you look at maybe the way English rugby is at the moment, some French teams not necessarily caring about the European Cup, the gap between the two in our perceptions should maybe start changing?
It's a tricky one, isn't it? The issue that this championship has is it's so new, and you know, people desire stuff because, you know, for lots of different rugby reasons in rugby, but you know, definitely one of them is history, and you know, that's why, you know, the top 14 is what the top 14 is. There's that sort of amazing history that comes along with it that means that, you know, to many teams in France it's more important than Europe is so important in Ireland because it has a special history, even though a short history. It has a special history within, you know, the provinces in Ireland, and it's, you know, seen as the premier competition. And it was also, you know, for a period like, you know, kind of the most money spending one. That's the other thing as well. You know, the focus on where the money comes from is an important factor. Not so much with fans, but it's actually where the teams commit to. So you're seeing, you know, France with funding of, you know, 98 million versus the Premiership, which is, you know, at 37 million. You know, that's why you know, the French league is one of the reasons why it has that status. I don't think, you know, the URC is sort of immediately going to change that position, you know, from an Irish team perspective, and it suddenly becomes, you know, of the status of the Premiership or the top 14 for those teams. But it is really important that we have a, you know, that this league develops, maintains, really, actually, because it's only been established in this form for a year. And is there, you know, is it a better setup, you know, with this sustained period of games at the start? I think probably yes. It feels as if it's more, there's actually a bit more respect given to it, as opposed to, you know, shimmying it around these European fixtures that are way more important. And it also forces teams into playing their players because they have to over this period. So, listen, the URC, you know, is an important competition. It's developing, but I still think it's quite a ways off Europe. And but, you know, that will build over time. You know, and you know, the, I suppose the other concern is, you know, more widely, we see what's going on in, you know, the Premiership in England. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's really, really scary. You know, I don't want to diminish Worcester Warriors either, but like Wasps.
No, I know. It's you've obviously played against them. We've had them over to Dublin plenty of times. You know, into Ireland, I should say. Munster fans are probably, you know, saying, hang on a second. The history of our clubs has been linked with it. It kind of feels wrong that they're in the same in that sort of situation.
Yeah, they are a massive team. You know, they're two times European Cup winners. They have a legacy of you know, amazing players, and also not just in the sort of the Premier, the Premiership League days, or even the sort of professional days. You know, going all the way back to, you know, I remember sort of watching them on you know, Scrum 5, and you know, when I was a sort of a kid growing up, you know, they were one of the big teams, and you know, to lose them is you know, is catastrophic in many ways. And I know there's been, you know, a lot of talk and people trying to sort of spin it in a positive way, saying that they can go down to a 10-team Premiership. Well, you know what? You could always have done that. You know, you could always have done it. But what you wouldn't have wanted to do it is without one of your very biggest teams, the Wasps. And it's you know, it's scary. It's absolutely scary because it's not as if, you know, those two sides are completely outliers in terms of the sort of debt that they're carrying as well. So the fact that I'm speaking about it in context of the URC, which obviously has less sort of private money, as it were, and it's more you know, sort of based on the overall administration and the unions, but is, you know, and therefore maybe protected in some way, because if those clubs go down, it's more catastrophic.
Well, there's talk as well amongst the English journos and in some of the papers, Shane, that, as you say, there's other clubs coming down the line. And if you're an English club on the brink and then you're missing out on another, say, two home games this season, so you won't play Worcester or Wasps, that's another couple of home games. There's gate receipts, there's sponsorship and all that sort of stuff. So if you're on the brink, this isn't good news. Your league looks a little bit Mickey Mouse now anyway. So the sell for all those weaker clubs looks even tougher.
And also for sort of commercial relationships, you know. So you're going out into a market, whether you're selling the league or you're selling the individual clubs, and you're going, well, it's difficult to have sort of meaningful conversations right now, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You know, if you're a commercial manager in some of those clubs, or indeed for the league, and, you know, and we also know CVC have put money in, and the expectation was that would be driving additional league revenue. You know, right at the moment,
CVC have been very quiet,
haven't they? Everybody, you know, it's you know, we see the economies around the world at the moment. Everybody wants stability. You know, everybody wants something that to know that, you know, the day after is going to be similar. You know, and you can't say that right now because again. Maybe if it was just Worcester Warriors, and I'm not, you know, doing a disservice to them, or perhaps I am, but, you know, the brand of Wasps is so big and has been so meaningful and has had such an impact both in the Premiership and at Europe. So it's a proper aristocratic club that has to shake everyone, because if they can go, anyone can go.
That's a bleak enough end to what started as a positive chat today. Shane, thanks a million.
Thanks a million, lads.
Surtout pas être pris hors jeu, pas hors jeu, pas hors jeu. Tant pis, on sait du terrain, mais pas.
Attention, le drop, il arrive. Le drop de Jonathan Sexton.
Le drop.
C'est terrible. Terrible.
Jonathan Sexton à la terre. On crucifie l'équipe de France.
France have been absolutely destroyed. Absolutely destroyed.
Available for Murray. Moves it back then out towards CJ Stander. CJ Stander under pressure, but it's Ireland to have control of it. Midway between the French 22 and the 10-metre line. Sexton with the attempted drop a goal. Both side the 22. Goes towards the post. It's gone towards the post. It's over. Ireland with the drop a goal. It's gone between the posts. Late drop. The ball is gone. The fellas are just literally on top of each other. Away to the left hand side. France have been absolutely destroyed with the final kick of the game. A drop a goal. France have been robbed of victory. 82, 83 minutes gone. After Stade de France, the place has gone mad. Ireland have snatched it from the jaws of defeat.
Incroyable. Quel match winner. Quel match winner.
Jonathan Sexton à la dernière seconde crucifie l'équipe de France. Que c'est dur. C'est terrible. Terrible. Le drop de Jonathan Sexton.
Got an email in here from Brendan McCarthy on Liverpool's win against Man City yesterday. Hi guys, just a quick one. I think it was a foul on Fabinho in the build-up to City's chalked off goal, but does then ruling it out because of the foul mean that let it flow is entirely redundant? The point in football being to score goals, but if one is scored as a result of letting the game flow, it's always going to be disallowed. Thus, anytime the game is let flow, it cannot actually lead to anything, which is, yeah, kind of a philosophical question that we wrestle with in today's football podcast. Brendan, don't worry about that.
Yeah, although it does also close off the path to goals as well. Don't forget what doesn't happen as a result of letting it
flow. That's exactly what Brendan's saying.
No, but I mean not just in the sense of the attacking team commits a foul, they let it flow, then they score a goal, then they say, oh no, actually that was a foul, we can't give that goal. Mm-hmm. I also mean, say a team is attacking and the defender makes a foul, they let it flow, and as a result the attack doesn't come to anything.
Gotcha.
But so the attack has been stopped by a foul, which is no longer being punished by the rules. So on both sides, let it flow is working against the possibility of scoring goals. Privileging defenders over attackers and giving people an increased incentive to foul. So, pretty dumb, huh? It's pretty dumb.
We let the conversation flow with Jonathan Wilson on today's... Thanks, Simon. On today's football podcast. Out now. Thanks, Ken. That episode is available to everyone. You'll have to be a World Service member to hear all our Premier League coverage during the week and our chat with the Rodfather himself. We're going to go and read some more of this book. Thanks, Kent.
Thank you very much, Owen.
Thanks, Simon.
Thanks, Owen. Thanks, Kent.
Thank you, Simon.
Thanks for listening. Sign up now on secondcaptains.com for daily ad-free pods. The Second Captains podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Out the
phone is at me. That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home. Those boys.
The Second Captains
World Service.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's to persuade that there's a world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.